kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Uh-oh.
I mean, you know, there's turkey at the end of the week.
Yes, true.
And so, like, I have something to look forward to. Everything doesn't suck nearly as bad as it did prior to the election. So yeah. I have an undeserved sense of optimism.
You being optimistic scares me.
You know, you say that, but I'm generally the most optimistic person in the room. I'm disgustingly optimistic under a lot of circumstances.
That sounded to me like when somebody says I'm the least racist person in the room.
Cold.
Not believable.
It's just by its very utterance,
it
is not true.
It just sounds full of shit. Like, I'm the most optimistic person here.
It really is. Like, I'm sickeningly joyful.
It's Tuesday. And there's typically several turkeys here on Tuesdays.
Gobble, gobble, bitch.
But I am looking forward to just indulging my fat side and not having to feel sorry about it. And I don't have to go to my in-laws to do it this year, and I'm even happier.
Are you guys doing, like, whipping up a nice feast at the house by yourselves?
Yeah. Usually we will go to my in-laws, and I'll also cook here because she doesn't cook enough to feed everybody that comes. My mother-in-law is the kind of person to, like, buy one of those 5-pound canned hams and heat it up and be like, Merry Christmas, right? She can't cook to save herself. And love her heart. Like, I made lemon pepper chicken one time, and she still complains that it had too much spice.
Wow.
And everything nice?
And I was literally like, this is the blandest I could possibly manage.
Wow.
This is a zero pepper rating at Wingstop.
Yeah. And like,
suck anymore for
still
trying.
Fusses at me about how it was too much.
And for the record, I feel you on that. Like, whenever I come across a person who's like, in fact, I'm not even going to be that guy. I'm just going to say it. Anytime I come across a person who's like, I want mild from Popeyes. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like,
I like mild from Popeyes.
Think about there's mild and then there's better. And it's like spicy at Popeyes is not spicy, but it tastes good, you know?
And
mild
attacked. Is like
it's okay,
Joe.
Joe.
Bland, confirmed.
You're still you're still my friend, but holy shit. Come on.
Do better.
Better, honky.
Like, because, like, I'm like, or even worse, like, Buffalo Wild was just like, what do you want? Give me 10 mile. The fuck you are. Where'd you, butter wings? What is this?
Why are you even here?
There's better places to get food if you're coming here from mild wings. Come on, man. Shouldn't even be in a wing joint at that point. Let's go get some real food. My God, man. It's just not meant for that. Like, it's literally soaking it in butter. It's just butter wings.
Yeah, that's not good. But Popeyes, I don't go to Popeyes for the spiciest shit in the world. I just go to Popeyes for good chicken.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying spiciest in the world. I'm just saying, even from the scope of good chicken, like, Popeyes spicy isn't spicy. And the flavor is where it's at. It's like the spicy flavor there is just good. But it's not hot or spicy. It's just good chicken. Mm-hmm. You know? So. It's like it messes with you because of what the fuck? Oh my God, this fucking puzzle.
What?
Planet review games.
I'm sorry. The point is, Popeyes, holy shit. You guys
are getting food. Distracted by games.
But the thing is, like, well, I mean, let's be honest. At the end of the day, though, the point is, mild. I can understand it being good because it's literally butter wings, but no one should like, no one should eat mild. No one should freaking eat mild in anything ever. Just don't get spice at all. Just get, like, I don't know. You know, get some, what do you want on your face? Give me some pepper. No, that's too spicy. Just
what are you, like, my in-laws?
Just rub a brick of peppercorn, like.
You want to talk? You want to talk spicy? They don't let me put paprika on the deviled eggs.
What?
As a garnish.
Wow.
Jesus. First because of all,
paprika is just for color.
I know.
That's the right answer. Like, I know it's supposed to be spicy, but really, I use paprika just for the color. Like, it just looks nifty.
I do use, like, smoked paprika from the Amish shop.
I do like smoked paprika, yeah.
And, like, it's super good. So it has a little more oomph than just, you know, being like McCormick paprika.
There goes our McCormick sponsorship.
Ruined sponsors. It's my job.
You're dead.
Where am I going to get, like, bay leaves now?
Go that shit yourself.
You're dead to us, SML.
It's the apocalypse, after all.
I gotta go to the store now and spend $1 on a gallon of onion powder.
Christ. Which is, that's an odd flavor thing, too, by the way. I don't like onions, but I'm okay with onion powder.
I'm the same way. Yeah, I can't.
I like onions and I like onion powder, and I do recognize there's a total difference between the two. They're both good in their own way for cooking.
Because I've had people outright say, like, why do you like onion powder? I mean, how do you like onion powder and not like onions? Like, I don't know. I just know onions suck. But onion powder is okay.
I will even top you there and go beyond onion powder and say that I like dried minced onions.
Gross.
But the moment that they are, like, fresh, get the fuck out of here with that. That's, I don't need that in my life.
I guess I can't outright fault that either. Because, I mean, like, I'll eat, like, sun-dried tomatoes, but I won't eat tomatoes in any other form.
Tomatoes are life. But I'm the only person in my house that will eat them. And so then, like, every year I grow, like, 4 different types of tomatoes. And then I'm drowning in them because I'm the only one that eats them.
Well, I mean, I guess there's ways you can prepare them to make them tolerable. But I don't know. I'm the anti-tomato man.
I like tomatoes. It depends on context, though.
Okay. No, I like tomato products, but I'm not a fan of raw tomato.
I will cut,
I don't like
those
bananas either. Open. While we're at it, I don't like bananas either. I like banana keys. Not bananas.
Same for now. Right.
You people are problematic.
They're mushy and shit. No mush nana.
Brunel, at last I found a friend.
Right, man. That's why we get along. That's why we get along. Don't think, I ain't eating those things. One of the only things I can think of where it's like people intentionally let them go bad before they cook them. Like, come on. Bananas are just nasty. That's the odd part. Actually, I'll eat banana bread. and I'll eat, you know, banana flavored like runts. But I'm not eating a whole banana. Not if I can help it anyway.
I love
Fun
these.
Fact, but banana flavored food is flavored after a breed of bananas that died out in the 70s. And so it tastes different than the bananas that we actually eat today because it's a different breed of banana.
Interesting.
And the reason it died out is because we duplicate them and clone them so much that they're not full of fucking seeds, obviously, so you can eat them, right? And so if a virus or something affects one crop, the banana breed is fucked and it's gone and you have to start over and make another one.
So the aphorism is true. Yes, we have no bananas.
Yeah. This has been Horticulture with Cole. And
and remember, folks, we have no bananas today. Yeah, that's right. People are listening, like, what the fuck are these guys on?
And the answer is, I don't know where this show's going today.
Cocaine.
So video games.
Yeah, video games.
Bananas in them.
All jokes aside, we do not support drugs on this show. Drugs are bad.
Well, it depends on the drugs.
Yeah, I'm drinking caffeine right now.
Guys, drugs are bad, remember. We're supposed to be setting a good example for the kids.
Listen, kids, pot's not a drug.
Actually, that's true, so I can't deny that. Even when I was a kid hanging out with my parents were like, you shouldn't do any drugs, Parnell, and I didn't. And all my friends were like doing weed and stuff. I'm like, you know, I don't really feel anything about this. You guys are smoking cigarettes, which are far worse, so you don't get to lecture me on doing drugs.
Yeah,
my drug of choice tonight is Mountain Dew Mary Mashup.
Ooh.
Is that back now?
Yep.
You know how sad that is? The fact that I still have a can of Mountain Dew Mary Mashup from last year.
Really?
Yes, it's been sitting on my kitchen table for an entire year, and I am not ashamed. It's just weird that I would keep it.
Damn. Even I don't save soda that long.
Oh, you really want to know? I got one for you then. I still have douche on.
What?
Why do you have a douche after an extended period of time?
No, Cole.
You said 30 you have months. A douche on, and I'm just here trying to understand.
Douche shine.
What has happened here?
Dew shine. Like moonshine, but Mountain Dew.
Mm-hmm. Nope,
still a douche.
Yeah.
Oh,
I know Pernell's a douche, but that's besides the point.
But this douche drinks douche-ine. Thank you very much. But like, no, like I still have a bottle from when they released that whole thing. It's just been sitting on my kitchen counter. I'm like, I should open that. It probably tastes like ash now, but I don't know what to do. Like, part of me is like, drink it. The other part of me is like, just let it sit there and drink it 20 years
from now. Sell it on the eBay.
You know, if anyone's got internet on them right now, you should look it up. How much is douche-ine going for on eBay? That would be a trip if I could sell that. Like, first I sold my Rock Band drum set. Now I'm selling douche-ine. Little bit cool.
$8 for empty bottles.
Ooh, for the empty bottle.
$52 for mason jars.
Someone's got a 12-ounce glass bottle, unopened, $8.99 with $10 shipping.
Limited edition douche-ine Mountain Dew never opened, rare, $90 for $9.90 shipping.
But that's probably just the asking price, but it probably didn't sell for that. I can't imagine it sold for that much.
It's either buy it now or make an offer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in that case, they're just hoping.
It has dust. They didn't even bother to wipe the dust off the top of it.
They're like, whatever. I'll do what I want. But that's it. Honestly, I can't even fathom like paying that much for like a freaking like fake soda. Or not fake soda, but for like an old soda. Like, what are you doing with your life? Like, well, I got money to burn. But then again, who am I talking? Who am I kidding? I ate freaking 1985 Garbage Pail Kid gum, so.
Well, here's another one for $14.99. So that guy might be a little overzealous with his.
Yeah, the $90 guy is out of his mind.
Well, here's another one for $90, though. But it's the like, 25-ounce.
Yeah, the big 25-ounce jugs, like, I can understand why those are more expensive.
Well, remember. Well, that's what I have. I have the jug.
Big 25-ounce jug? I thought you meant had like a glass bottle of it.
No, it came in a cylinder with the freaking like old Schluckenheimer.
Yeah, those are the ones that are selling for $90.
Yeah, I have that one. So they're selling for $90.
Uh-huh.
Like, holy yeah, guess what's going on eBay after this episode? So little bit of douche, folks. Who wants some old-ass red soda? For $90.
Wow. Yeah, it's in like the wood planky looking can with like a green top and
kitchen right now.
You
should send me a picture, Pernell. We'll use that as the image for the episode.
Okay. Remind me when we're done recording. I'll snap a shot and send it over to you. It's just sitting there waiting for me to do something with it.
If it's got the car, it's $100.
I don't know if mine has a card. I just have the cylinder itself.
Like the little die-cast Dale Earnhardt Jr. cars are going for $100. And then somebody has a promo sign for $55.
Intriguing. See, I can work with this. Don't worry, guys. I'll let you guys know the juicy details when my old soda makes me a mint. Also, I might start looking at that Mercari bottle because I didn't tell you. I got hit. They hit me pretty hard on the fees, too, for that Rock Band set.
Yeah.
And that sucked. But I was like, I just feel lazy. I just want to get this thing out of the house. It wasn't even about the money at the time. I was like, just get rid of it. And then when I saw how much money I was going to get, I was like, yeah, money. And it was like, no, actually, sir, we got to hit you for the shipping. Which was funny because I actually shipped it myself. I didn't even use the eBay feature to do it, but they got me for shipping. They got me for the PayPal transfer. It got me for like one other thing. It was like, for the listing fee. So in the end, I dropped like $100 just to sell the damn thing.
Damn.
It sucked rump, major rump. So at the end of the episode, you should just like mention that Mercari said just to tell people, don't be a Purnell. Use Mercari. Remember, kids.
Man. All right. Well, we got games to talk about. Should we get into this? We have a lot to talk about tonight. You guys ready?
Yeah.
I'm more like bluey or greeny.
First game to talk about tonight is called Sniper Elite 4, developed and published by Rebellion. Released November 17th on the Switch for $39.99. One bullet can change history. Experience tactical third-person combat, gameplay choice, and epic sharpshooting across gigantic levels as you liberate World War II Italy from the grip of fascism. Chris, tell us about Sniper Elite 4.
Fascism. I don't know. It's funny to like. It's funny to say it in it in the context of it actually being like the 40s. Like, oh, we're actually talking about the original fascists, those guys in the 40s in Italy. But anyway, yeah, so Sniper Elite 4, well, this is a... So I hesitate to call it like an army game, right? Because it's a shooting game. But there, you're the army. You're the one arm, the guy who is the entire army. What shoots everybody in the world like from a distance, and that's the entire point of it. And by the way, I have a Wikipedia page pulled up so I can tell you the character's name is Carl Fairburn. I literally tried 3 times to memorize that name, and every time I tapped out, I forgot it.
Wow.
So you and good old Carl are going to be sneaking and sniping your way through the through beautiful like Mediterranean seaside towns and things like that for the first bit. So it's basically that you are like you basically disembark and get into like an area and. You just immediately go to work, and usually you have like 3 or 4 objectives, and sometimes those change during the course of a stage. The stages, they weren't kidding, are gigantic, like entire, like real sized towns, basically. And, you know, they pepper in all these soldiers and stuff in strategic locations, vehicles, other snipers sometimes, and high ranking officers and whatnot. And you get your targets, but like the regular militia are just kind of walking around there as, you know, dots on your radar. And of course, you know, they're white dots when they have no idea you're there. They're yellow dots when they're looking for you, and they're red dots when they found you. The idea is to get yourself hidden and make sure that you get yourself at a far enough distance that when you start taking them out, they don't go from yellow to red because you want them looking for you, but not actually finding you. But the game's really good about so basically, you know, you have your sniper rifle and then you have your machine gun for, you know, mowing down dudes with a machine gun. And then you
as
have
you
your pistol
to do.
Yeah, as one is wont to do. And then you have like your little service pistol, which I don't know, just for getting headshots with a pistol. I mean, that's all I used it for.
Shits and giggles.
Yeah, exactly. Shoots and giggles, as it were. And the cool thing is, I don't remember if they did this in Sniper Elite 3, but they were much better at explaining this stuff in 4. They're all mapped to the directional pads. So if you're like, you got your sniper rifle out, but then you're like, oh crap, I didn't see that dot because I was trying to aim and now the dot's upon me. You can push right on the directional button right and he just like swaps out the guns real fast and you can take it, you know, take that guy down. And like, that's the thing that I like about this particular Sniper Elite is that everything, it feels so much less like, you know, a dangerously realistic, like, you know, oh, we're in, you know, I, absolutely can't get caught or and I'm dead and I have to like start all over and blah 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 and you know things like it keeps you tense, but at the same time everything is so much like smoother in terms of like the game letting you play it the way you want to play it. So like you know, the way that the levels are set up, I like the best way I can describe it is it's like a playground for snipers. It's like there's so much stuff to climb and hide behind and like duck underneath and like, you know, aim through. And like, again, there's houses. So it's not like the desert, like how three started out was in the desert. It's like a town. You can like take in, you know, take over a house and like snipe people from that and then like have another escape route. And like you can just kind of make your own little escape routes. You can mark them on, you know, mark things on the map and like follow to specific goals and stuff. Or you could just like, you know, sneak around until something appears on your radar and then you just shoot it and it's dead. Like you could do whatever you want. And so I took like the although I played it on a lower difficulty, there's five difficulty modes, one of which is apparently harder than real life is kind of how they advertise it.
How is it harder than real life? In real life, if you get shot, you're dead. That's it.
Yeah, that's the fourth difficulty level in this game. The fifth says it's even harder than that. I don't know what that means. I dared not try. But so, yeah, even though I kept the difficulty relatively low, I like took my sweet time. I was like sneaking around. I was making sure I had like a clear path to like a place to run away from while the heat died down every time I took a shot. And long story short, and then long again, I clocked the first stage at about 2.5 hours.
Wow.
So that's what I mean by when I say that these stages are large. And of course you can't just like run in with your machine gun blazing and stuff like that. I mean, you won't get all those sweet rewards and experience points. Now this is a game that rewards you, based on how well you can dispatch foes at a distance. And, you know, it ranges with all three kinds of weapons and you get specific awards, like achievements, basically those. And, you know, they come in the form of medals, of course, and those factor into your level. And all of that, like, goes into, you know, accumulating a mastery over your weapon. And as you master weapons, you unlock more stuff. And so you get more stuff, and then you can go in with different stuff. And so, and rather than, and of course, you know, anybody that you kill, you can go and get their weapon if you want. So, like, there's what different weapons you can play around with in the stage, but your loadout is going to be different. And there's also, like, a ton of weapons and skins and even missions like hidden behind a very large DLC pack. Only one of which is like separated out and it's a mission wherein you kill Hitler.
Nice.
So that's nice. Yeah. So, you know, Sniper Elite, if you're buying Sniper Elite 4, just know that you're going to have to shell out 10 more bucks to kill Hitler or like 30 bucks for all that other DLC stuff, including the killing Hitler thing. So which of course is not exactly historically accurate, but they do try. Like they use real, like, you know, OSS and SOE and like, you know, different World War II time, like, you know, organizations and stuff. So, but mainly what I love about this game, I like it so much more than three, because I really love the settings and I really love the different ways that you can like utilize the stages. And the enemy AI is pretty good. Like, you know, people act a little bit more realistically, not totally realistically, because like any stealth game, they eventually forget that like their friends got shot in the head. And, you know, like you do. And of course, oh, by the way, this one brings back the infamous X-ray system whereby, you know, if you nail a headshot or something like that, it goes into bullet cam mode where it shows like the camera behind the bullet. And then it cuts to the foe, and then it cuts away to an X-ray of their skeleton and eyeballs and guts and stuff, and then it shows the bullet enter in and just, like, explode everything within, and, you know, then they fall back, of course, and it rates you on how well you did. And yes, I have scored some testicle shots.
I was just going to ask if you got any nut shots.
Nobody cares about the head shots. We care about the nut shots.
Yeah,
I got a testicle shot while the soldier was leaning over to help his friend. So from the rear.
Oh, damn! <got him. laughs> Poor guy.
On the positive, at least they cleared his body. He didn't get lodged in there.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to it. He, you know, I just robbed his corpse of bullets and stuff to put into my guns, and so. Yeah, the game is like, it kind of almost takes itself seriously, like the story does, but then once you get into it and you like start doing x-ray shots and stuff, it just becomes just this romp. It is so fun. Like I said, it's a playground for shooting people from a distance and stuff. And in Sniper Elite 4, now it has a, it has online multiplayer, of course, which I think the other one did as well. But this one has a local and online co-op mode. So you can have up to 4 snipers in each stage blasting away. And I don't know how that plays out because this is not the time to have friends over.
But, very true.
But this game does feature that. And some other stuff that it has like a nice shooting range so that you can like learn how to use your gun and stuff. Like I said, some of the difficulty levels feature stuff like ricochet shots and like, you know, quote unquote realistic ballistics and stuff like that. And there's just like a ton of content. Like not only are the stages long, there's a lot of them. And there's, like I said, a lot more DLC. There's just a ton of like experience to gain and levels to gain in each and every weapon. So if you are into sniping, like this is pretty much heaven right here.
Nice. You mentioned the DLC. A season pass is available for $29.99, or the digital deluxe edition is $59.99. So you could save $10 if you want to get the full package. But just the base game at $40, what do you think?
I say this is definitely a buy it. As a person who doesn't really like army games, but does like shooters and loves like stealthy type, you know, stuff like this, this game, I just kept going back to it. Like if it weren't for the fact that I got off work early one of these days, I almost didn't play my other games. But this game will really suck you in, and it is a lot of fun. I recommend it for anybody who's wanting to get into this series because like this is, it's really good stuff. So I say it's worth the $40 for sure.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Next game to talk about is called QV, developed by Izzle, published by CFK, released November 26th on the Switch for $14.99. Started dimension jumping adventure with QV. That's all we got for you. Pernell, tell us about it.
Oh, well, I guess I better start my dimension hopping adventure with QV. This is one of those cases where I saw it on the eShop and went to request it because it resonated with me due to the style of gameplay that was presented in the actual trailer, and it genuinely did not disappoint me in that regard. What am I talking about? Well, there is the concept of gameplay that doesn't get a lot of love these days. It's like the isometric puzzle platformer, so to speak. Well, less platforming because you don't jump in this game, but isometric puzzle adventure, I'll call it. And the idea of this game is that you control a girl named QB, who is a little girl who, there's a weird narrative they try to slap in there where she's trying to resolve an issue with the dimensional core. And she's trying to do so by going between a bunch of different worlds and activating a bunch of like magic doors. And that's ultimately supposed to help her do it. So the way they break this down is that you go to each like 6 different worlds. Each world has about 10 stages in it. And when you land on the stage, your goal is to maneuver her through the level to find a gold switch that will unlock a door to exit the stage and then reach the door and get out. Now, what is there that she can do while you're navigating this, like, you know, top down, you know, isometric perspective? Well, her primary ability is that she has a magic brush, which allows her to manipulate, I guess, like stone walls, specifically stone walls. And these, you do one of two things with your brush. You can either A, make the stone wall split open and reveal a door so you can walk through it. And the other thing you can do is paint a portal onto the door. Sort of like, you know, the original, like, just like Portal in, like, you know, that old Valve game. You create a portal on one slab and then create a portal on the another slab, and you create a door, a gateway to travel between the two. If you decide to make another gateway set up between two more slabs, you'll create another gateway. So you can have, like, multiple gateways on one stage if you really want to or need to. At that point, that's the main thing that she can do. But on each stage that you go to, there's also, like, other gimmicks that unlock for that stage where you have to manipulate other objects or creatures to progress through the stage. And honestly, it's a lot of fun just to do that, just to play around with those elements of the game, just trying to get from beginning to end on each level successfully. The music is pretty solid, and there's, like, a little bit of a collectible in the form of, like, these, like, you get, like, three butterflies per stage you can use to, like, buy cosmetic upgrades later on. But in addition to, like, her normal gameplay, there's also, like, a few other characters you'll meet through the game in the narrative that ultimately end up also becoming playable on certain stages in a way that helped kind of also, you know, further expand the gameplay of the different puzzle stages. Now, one thing I like about this game, well, I guess it could go either way depending on who's playing, is that the levels themselves, unless you just get straight up stumped, are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
Hello? Oh, he had me scared for a second. Jesus.
What happened?
Okay. Long as you're okay.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. Jesus Christ.
Did my chair, like, pop or something?
No, I was just like, what? I'm like, whoa. Oh. I'm going to get in my car. I'll see you in 17 hours. So in addition to all that, each level, like, you know, aside from the MacGuffin, the three item MacGuffin, like I say, each level itself is fairly short unless you generally get stuck. So think of it in a sense like when you open a level up, you might find yourself trying to resolve the method that the game intends for you to utilize to beat the stage. But once you full out figure out what it is and try to solve the stage, you can usually get through the level within, like, a couple of minutes, like 2 to 3 minutes, sometimes even less if you're really good at it. But then another thing I like about the game is that each stage has difficulties. There's an easy, medium, hard, and an unlockable difficulty called QV, like the name of the game. But funny enough,
White, when I started vicious. Playing the game,
I like that. Maybe that's what it actually stands for. If it's not, they won't tell us. QV, unlock quite vicious difficulty. But the funny thing about it is, like, I kind of, like, accidentally ended up having it set on hard by default, and I just kind of let it go that way, because in the end, the puzzles were just fun to try to solve. I didn't even feel the need to. Though, admittedly, I could see myself going back and doing the normal puzzles too, because it's like a remix of the stage in a way. So it really does feel like you're doing two different puzzles. So it's not like it's not the sort of thing where it's like, well, if I beat it on hard, there's nothing to be available to me on normal. Because really, again, it's a different layout for the puzzle. So you are technically solving two puzzles, which is kind of cool. I honestly found myself really engaged by this game. The music works well for it to keep you kind of relaxed. I like kind of trying to make sense of each new gimmick for the game stage when I unlock, when I reach them. I just like the aspect of the gameplay too. Anything, I only wish you fought instead. Most of the time, like, when it's an adversary, it's more like avoiding them. But anyway, at the end of the day, like, this has been a style of gameplay that I've always been fond of, like the whole isometric running around concept. The one gripe I even had about it, and that's probably more something for me, is if you have even a modicum of Joy-Con drift, be freaking aware, because normally you can't fall off the stages because all the stages are kind of like floating above the sky. But there are certain platforms that are like, you know, like floating platforms where you kind of stop, you jump on the platform on the one side, and then when the platform floats to you, you walk on top of it, let it float across, you step up. These areas are the primary zones where you can actually fall off the stage and have to get sent back to a last checkpoint if you fall. And frankly, that is annoying as balls, because I would Joy-Con drift off those things quite a bit. So if you got Joy-Con drift, you might want to bust out a pro controller for this thing, because it will annoy the tar out of you when you constantly walk off the platform accidentally because you're trying to finesse your way onto them. But aside from that, I found much to love about this game. It's good.
Well, then $15, what do you think?
I think it's a solid buy if you're a fan of puzzle action games. you will get your money's worth and then some. Even like I said, I'd almost even recommend doing the normal puzzles first and then doing the hard, just again to maximize the two or three puzzles per stage or whatever.
Hey, replayability is always good.
Damn Skippy
indeed. Next game is called In Celebration of Violence, developed by Julian Edison, published by Dolores Entertainment, released November 24th on PS4, 26th on the Switch for $12.99. A fantasy action roguelike of exploration and murder. Live, kill, die, improve, live again. I'm going to assume it then leads to kill again and die again?
You'd think so, but actually everybody just like sits down to tea and talks it out.
Huh. That's an interesting twist.
Yes, but it doesn't exist. I made it up.
Oh, I'm guessing instead there's violence.
Yes, now you're there.
Got it.
Okay. So in celebration of violence, which, you know, honestly, like when I saw that, I was like, oh, this has got to be like a shooter or something like that. And it's all like, you know, super bloody and like, I don't know, satirical or something, like some goofy ass thing. But no, it's actually not. It is a, as they say, a fantasy roguelike with, oh man, difficulty, with so much difficulty. And it takes itself quite seriously. I would go so far, and I don't usually describe video games as like this, but I would go so far as to say the game is dour. Dour. You know, just the intro, you're going to be like, oh, what am I getting into? It's like, I don't know. It's funny. Funny in the sense that it's unusual, not funny or humorous, because it's just talking about death and priests and pilgrims and all this other stuff. So you start the game, you start with four different types of characters that you can load out, like pilgrim, merchant. One of them is just a coward. You can just choose to be a coward. I don't know what that gets you, because the game kind of starts off the same way. You start off in a hub world, of course, like any good roguelike. And imprinted on the floors are actually a description of all the controls and stuff like that, which is kind of interesting. But the game really withholds a lot of information about like what things do, and how to progress and how to do anything really. You've got some other people in the hub that kind of talk to you a little bit about, like, you know, speaking almost allegorically, like hinting at certain things, and everything like has a number on it because it all costs something. And so you get out there into the world and you got your little swingy weapons. Now, this is a top down type of action RPG, where you're the smallest weapon I could find was twice as large as the character sprite. And yeah, like other people, of course, if you run into too high level of an enemy, human, whatever, that has another weapon, like sometimes those weapons are like four or five times longer than the characters. It's pretty crazy. Like, but they're very small sprites. Like this is like, you know, even smaller than NES like sprites. Like it's hard to describe. They're very just little Lego characters. It's like if a kid had like a very small Lego set, but they wanted to pretend to be playing Dark Souls, like, and they were like, dee, 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 you know, like just had their two little characters in each hand and were swinging them around. That's kind of like what this game looks like. And the sound. Okay. So I'm not going to get down on the music too much. It has the effect of unease and dourness that it's going for, but it honestly sounds like somebody like, you know, put on some ambient tune and then their cat started walking across the piano. And once I got that thought into my head, it happened every time. Anyways though. So yeah, you swing at these enemies really slow. The stages go in like the same order, but they're, you know, they're different in layout. And more importantly, they're different in what items are in each level. And the items and different things like that are what like really kind of turn this. It like shows a little bit of the rest of the iceberg that this game is. So when you kill enemies, they drop little purple things, which are experience points. However, those experience points are what literally everything costs, apart from some things cost materials, which you can extract from the environment, which is a whole nother system I'm not going to go into, but that's there's resource collection as well. So those experience points, once you get enough of them, and each enemy is going to drop a fairly good amount of them, so there will be encased in crystal, like all kinds of little items and stuff, and spell books and, you know, weapons, mementos are some things that are in there. And the number value is how much they cost in those experience points. Now, you no longer have access to the hub once you've left it. So therefore, you can't just go back to that hub and start buying stuff. Oh, no, that's for loadout. In the levels, you collect these items by spending your experience points. And then when you inevitably die, because you will die hundreds and hundreds of times, thousands maybe, you get a fraction of however many experience points you died with that you get to then put towards leveling up your character. Now, if you get like 10 points of experience and let's say you collected like 60 experience points, and then before you could purchase a life-saving item, you end up getting shot with an arrow that you couldn't dodge, and then you die. That happens a lot. Well, then you go back to you restart, you live again, you choose your character again. By the way, your characters, the character selection, even though these are little tiny Lego people, you can choose, I think, up to 5 gender representations, like 20 skin colors and like every kind of hair color, including bald.
Wow.
So like there's a lot that you can do to customize your character. That's about 20 pixels, you know, total. So
yeah, I'm looking at screenshots. These are tiny little characters.
Yeah. Yeah. But you can make that character, you know, exactly your identity. So, you know, exactly the kind of person that you are is what you can make your character. So that's kind of cool. Anyways. So like different things happen when you, come back to life. If you spend 10 experience points, there's about 8 different stats that are represented on the lower left of the screen, like strength, dexterity, speed. Of course, speed and dexterity are different, and, endurance and like, you know, your health meter. And you can pour 10 points into one of those to gain a level, and that thing will go up by 1%. And the potential amount that those can go up to is in the hundreds.
Oh, geez.
Like basically, yeah. You can get hundreds of levels in this game, and you probably will. So the thing about it is that you're meant to spend these experience points in the game getting items to like help you survive. Like level's not as important as these items. And here's the other thing that's just, this game is impenetrable, by the way. when you pick up an item in one game, so you know, you pick up like a chip sword or something like that, well, it will show you a few letters in the description of that weapon, and so and then you can use it. And then like when you die and go pick up that weapon again, a few more letters appear. You have to collect the items in subsequent playthroughs a lot of times in order to even know what the item is, really. So that's why you're meant to like spend all these like points in the game to like actually, you know, uncover these items and like uncover their mysteries and just like all this other stuff. It goes so deep. And I didn't even know that until like I had already died like 20 times and I went to read some FAQs because the game wasn't going to tell me anything. And yeah, this one person like this game has like collected a community of extremely hardcore fans that have written these long, long playthrough guides on like Steam and stuff. And like they still don't know everything in the game. So like, jeez. On its surface, it's a really super hard roguelike that you're never going to win until you put enough hours into learning it. But, you know, it goes so deep and so like wide on the amount of things that you have to know and have to play through, you know, in these many, many deaths. Then, yeah, you will feel that this thing is In Celebration of Violence.
Like the title.
Like the title.
Ah.
Like the title.
Yeah.
Well, $12.99. What do you think of this one?
Okay, so there's this truth to life that if one works hard and plays one's cards right, you can end up with an excess of money or free time. This game is for people who have the excess of free time and not a lot of money. if you only have your $12.99 and you want one video game to like play for the rest of your life, then this is a hearty recommended buy it. For folks who are hesitant to get into games that are extremely hard and dense and a little on the slow side, then I'm going to say it's a try it at best. However, I had fun with it and I'm definitely going to be going through it. I might even buy the Switch version just so I can do this, the portable thing, because that's the only way I can put hours into games anymore. So I like it, but it is a try it.
Sounds good. And I will cross my fingers that they eventually bring this one to Xbox, because I think it looks pretty cool and I'd like to give it a go myself.
Heck yeah. Yeah, it's worth it, like, once you start getting into it.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So come on, Dolores Entertainment, bring it to Xbox. Do us a solid.
Yeah.
Next game is called 80s Overdrive, developed and published by Insane Code, released May 7th on the Switch for $9.99. 80s Overdrive is a 2D pixel art racing game designed to take you back in time when 8 and 16-bit consoles and arcade games ruled the world. Compete against opponents in career mode to unlock new races, buy new cars, upgrade them with state-of-the-art technologies, try your skill in the time attack mode and see how far you can get in this race against the clock. Create your own tracks with the built-in track generator and easily share them with your friends. Purnell, is there anything left to say? Because I think I just said everything about the game.
I honestly really feel like you did. So the best way to line this guy up is to say that it is designed with what I believe to have been the game, the classic game OutRun in mind. You drive your car from the exact same perspective in every way. So the general concept of the game, well, the general idea for the game is there's two modes. There's time attack mode and there's career mode. In career mode, you essentially are given a series of maps or races. There's a fair number of races on here. I didn't sit down and count every star on here, but I'm going to guess there's like at least 25 to 30 races. And the idea is that you choose a race to do it. Now, when you choose a race, they come in a variety of different classifications, like the length of the race, the number of, you know, well, I guess the length of the race, the number of lanes that could exist on the highway itself, the quantity of traffic, the aggressiveness of your opponents, and if the police are going to show up. Now, when you pick a course, you have to pay a fee to enter the race itself. So essentially the idea behind that is that every race comes at a cost. So you don't want to just start entering races and losing constantly, because if you do, you'll go broke and there goes your career. So once you've done that, you then have to choose your car, which you want to use to race in the actual race. And initially you have to pay for the car. Like, you got to buy your first car, and there's like a few that you can choose from. And they're all like basic knockoff names of cars from the '80s or whatnot. So you basically go in, you buy a car, and they have three different stats. Engine, which I assume is for like max speed. Steering is for how well you do on the curves. And bumpers for collision-related damage. Like, you know, if you bump into cars, does it stop your car? Do you kind of keep going? And so on and so forth. So, you buy a car. You can also purchase, like, nitro boosts. And you know what? Anyone who's played a game and this knows what a damn nitro boost is. You can buy a nitro boost. You can buy some, basically, fuel for your car. Because other ways that you try to keep you from just, like, blitzing the game is that as you drive on races, you use gasoline. And eventually, you're going to get to the point where if you don't buy gas to refill your car, you'll run out of gas during a race, which will probably cost you money for a tow or something. I don't know, because guess what? Just like in real life, I'm not going to run out of freaking gas on the highway. So there's that. And then there's also damage. So in a lot of racing games like this, you kind of are able to just like kind of, you know, when you come across another car, you might just slam into them, just kind of rebound off of it for the turn or whatever, or just like, get out of my way, I want to win this race. Well, in this game, when you collide with other cars, whether it be your opponents or just general traffic, you do damage to your car. And you want to ultimately keep it repaired and up to speed because, well, I don't know what happens if you let your car go out of shape, because again, just like in real life, I'm not going to let my car get beat to shit without repairing it. So you pay cost to repair your car. So you essentially run these races, win races to get money to buy new cars and then upgrade your stats on the car to unlock new races and do those and just wash and rinse, repeat the cycle. Time Attack plays more like OutRun to the letter, though, where it's an endless race and you are trying to last as long as possible and beat a clock. If you run out of time, the mode is over. As you progress through the stages, every time you get to a certain point in the stage, you are given the choice of two routes you can take, which will continue your pursuit of, you know, traffic insanity. You can get time bonuses by sort of like, what's that? I guess, what do they call it? Like shmups, where you kind of rub paint. I guess that is what it is, rubbing paint.
Trading paint.
There you go. You'll get time bonuses for what's essentially trading paint in this game, which is being as close to the car as possible without actually colliding with it and driving past it. So for the most part, the entire concept of the game is playing OutRun in two different modes. And honestly, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. OutRun is a classic for a reason. This game wanted to kind of jump on that a little bit, but with some 80s, you know, flair from the graphics down to the really nice soundtrack. There's like 18 different tunes you can choose from. You can select them anytime you want while driving just by hitting the radio dial buttons. And honestly, the music in the game is very solid as well. It does what it set out to do. And I honestly did find it enjoyable. The only downside to it, I think, is that just like OutRun, it can get old. Because if you remember how OutRun worked, I mean, once you got tired of just like hitting checkpoints and dodging traffic, that was literally the entire game. Just how far can you get? That was OutRun. This game is like that too. There is the idea of, you know, buying the cars and upgrading the cars and all that. But at the end of the day, you really are just driving down a road with a different background, you know, and just doing that over and over again and getting cars that drive faster to do the exact same thing. No. But again, nothing wrong with that because it's designed to be a classic style game. Just want to get that footprint out there so no one gets in this thing expecting like unlock like new rivals and this. So one thing I should mention also is that there is like a bit of a mission structure that sometimes comes up in career mode where you might get a submission before starting a race where you might be asked to collide with a specific racer multiple times or something, or out to beat a specific racer sometimes. And if you complete the mission, you get extra money to go towards upgrading your car and such. So that's the other thing in the game. But again, for the most part, that is what you get. As far as the game goes, I guess rating wise, I guess I'd give it more of a try it concept because, again, you have to be coming to this with the idea of mind of it being a classic style game without a ton of depth. You just want to boot this up, drive your car down the highway for a little bit, unlock the car, turn it off, come back later, maybe do it again until you get tired of it, washing it for keep. But I want to say, I'm just saying try it because I want somebody to buy the game and pick it up and be like, oh, well, shit, yeah, I'm ready to drive. And it's like, where's the rest of it? Well, I freaking warned you. You should have listened to me. So that's my version. I'm sticking to it.
Sounds good.
Or does it? It does. It better. It should.
I'm just curious if you're going to keep going or not.
I should have. Damn it. I let a good opportunity go to waste.
Oh, man. All right. Next game is called Psycho Wolf, developed by High Dragon, published by Ultimate Games. It released November 20th on Steam for $7.99. Psycho Wolf is an indie stealth game which draws inspiration for its unique graphics from the first 3D games of the mid-90s. Gameplay itself is the evolution of the best mechanics encountered in modern games. Chris, what does that mean?
I forgot about that description. No, it's not that at all. Okay, so let's talk about Psycho Wolf. Because, man, I put hours into this thing just to try and figure it out. So, the story is that you're a wolf who, I guess, fooled a bunch of critters into purchasing metal bars that were painted gold for money, which I don't know what the money is for, really. And they found out, and they put him in jail. And so he apparently spent so long in jail that he ate the metal bars that they, I guess, locked up with him, and it turned him into a psycho. So then he broke out of jail, and now your job is to go around, I think, 13 levels of different, like, animal villages and stuff and murder everybody. Like, literally everybody. So the way that the game is, like, kind of presented is it's, like, a kind of, it's sprites on polygons. So like, you know, it looks very paper cutouty, which I don't know where that was in the mid 90s, apart from that's just, that's like how everything looked. But this has that intentional look. Like, you know, it's intentionally a very cartoony game. So yeah, you pick up like a an emergency axe, like that kind of red axe with the white tip. I forget what those are supposed to be called. And yeah, you run around, and so there's different types of animals. There's deer type animals that are fast, but they don't fight back, and so you can just, you know, murder them if you can catch them. Or you can gather up resources, and you can turn those resources into traps. And so you can, like, you know, take some of those, you know, metal bars from before and some nails and make like a bear trap. And so that will kind of help you out. But as I found out, 100% of the kills can just be done by running up to the animal and hitting it with an axe. So once they fall over and they're dead, the game has letters over them say bag him. And this is where I got very confused, because, like, okay, you can make bags. That's one of the many items you can craft. And if you use that bag on an animal, that animal's now in a bag and on your shoulder, and now you're moving extremely slow and there's no way to get rid of the animal. Like, it hinders you until you die or leave the stage. So I tried dumping it in the river. I tried going up to, like, different things. The game doesn't tell you. So instead of ever doing that, I just kept hacking them with the axe once they were dead. And of course their body parts, like, fall off it, but it's not very gory. It's just, like, because they're cartoons, like, you know, where it's like two legs drawn onto a body, like paper cutout style, the legs just kind of come off, and, like, it's like murdering puppets, really. And all of this makes a meter go up. It's a yellow number. It doesn't say what it is. It's just a yellow number. And the more you hit an enemy, even after it's dead, the more that number goes up. But every time you swing your weapon, it goes down by one. So if you hit it, if you hit somebody, it goes up by three. If you just swing it, it goes down by one. So the number is just constantly changing, and you're trying to keep ahead of it. And that, what that number does is it allows you to unlock stages past stage two. So yeah, you're running around murdering animals. Two of them can fight back. Well, in later levels, the enemy types change, but they more or less all do the same things. There's the bear type enemies that can kill you in like two punches. And then there's like a ram type enemy that can, that kind of like runs after you and tries to gore you. But, they're usually, you know, you can just walk to the side and then hack them with the axe and then it's fine. Yeah, the game never explains anything. And, like, so I did my due diligence and I went to stage two, killed everyone in stage one. I killed everyone in stage two, you know, grabbed up all the resources and stuff. And I went to stage three and unlocked it. And then I got killed because, you know, if you don't dodge a bear in time, then it'll pretty much like end your thing right there. And you have to always start the level completely over again. And when I got back out of stage three, even though I had unlocked it, it was asking for that stuff again, the yellow numbers. And I was like, what? You have to unlock the stage every time you play it until you beat it? And I was like, okay, that's very odd. So instead, I just went back to level two and I went back to level three and I cleared it out again. And I had so much money, not money, but yellow numbers, that I went to like stage six. And when I unlocked stage six, I went in and it had, you know, because I wanted to see like different scenery and hear different soundtracks, because I'll get to the soundtrack in a second. I went to stage six and then it unlocked every stage up to six once I beat level six. So I was like, is this on purpose? And so they also advertise this as a stealth game. So, like, you know, you can build yourself a really, you know, funny looking, like bad, like disguise of a bush. And, you know, I don't know if it works or not, because, again, most of my kills were just walking up to the enemy and murdering them right there. But there's also like bushes that if you walk up to them, it's like push the button to hide. And so I pushed the button to hide. The very first time I did that, it literally took me out of the game into white space, like into the void. And I had to restart the stage. And I was like, well, I sure am hidden. They kicked me out of the game. And that was like those couple of things are, you know, anecdotal points to a larger point that this game is mostly broken. As you fight enemies, like the basic way that you know that an enemy is alive or dead from a distance is that it'll say bag him if they're dead and you haven't chopped them up or bagged them yet. And if they're alive, it'll say like two hits, or it'll say one hit or four hits. That number changes randomly. and it's always wrong. So like a one hit enemy usually takes two hits. A two hit enemy usually takes one hit. A four hit enemy usually takes two hits. And I couldn't find any rhyme or reason to any of that. It was just like, I think they just didn't program it well enough where, because there's no life meters or anything apart from yours. So most things just went down in two hits, you know, it's kind of how it went, including me. The soundtrack is, so here's the thing. They credited the creator of the game, I think, with the soundtrack, but also Creative Commons. So I think the soundtrack was just purchased from a site that just had music. And that would make sense because the music is very incongruous. Like when you're going through the first several stages, then it's this like, it's this peppy bluegrass type song, which is, I suppose, meant to be a joke. And then like in a, you know, in the stage six and onwards, I think it's like a funky kind of song that's, you know, I couldn't quite place the genre. The music would play for 1 minute and then completely stop, and 5 seconds later would start up again, you know, a different loop. So it's just like somebody just like hit the back button on the CD player.
Wow.
And the thing is, each song was 1 minute long. The stages tended to take about 20 to 30 minutes to complete.
Oh, no.
Yes. So I had to hear the same song just by itself. Yeah, that many times. And so, yeah, like there's, it's just one of those things where it's like, I was like, I get this game, but I kind of wonder who it's for. Like, I get that they're trying to go for humor, but it's not really humorous. It's just, you just run around and kill things. There's no jokes. I get that it's perhaps meant to indulge like a violent, you know, fantasy, which, you know, a lot of games are like that. That's all right. But it's not that violent. It's just like a little spray of red and then, you know, the enemy puppet falls apart and, you know, that's it. keep repeating. And so, yeah, it was just like the whole time, you know, the only thing that like really kept me going and interested is to see how many other different ways the game could be broken, or trying to learn like what the game wants me to do with, for instance, money. I still don't know. You can collect cash all throughout the stages, and there's no shop to be pointed at, and no like shops in the levels. Like there's plenty of houses, but that you just go in there and find more money. It's like, what's this for? And the game sure ain't telling. So yeah, it was an interesting one.
And so $8 on it. What do you think of it?
Again, I can't figure out who this game is for, and it's mostly broken, so I'm just going to give it a deny it. If they fix some problems and maybe put an instruction page up there somewhere, then I would upgrade it to a try it, but there were precious few high points to this one, so I can't recommend it to most people.
Hey, they can't all be winners.
That's true.
Next game to talk about is called Out of Space, developed by Behold Studios, published by Plug-In Digital, released November 25th on Xbox One for $9.99. You and your friends are about to move into a house in space where you will have to deal with a deadly alien infestation and face the challenges of building a sustainable spaceship, all to make your new place feel as cozy as home. Cole, tell us about Out of Space.
That summary is basically the whole game in a nutshell.
Okay.
Like, that's the long and short of it. If you've ever played Overcooked and been like, this is too frantic and has too many options, and I just want to clear out aliens in space instead, like cleaning my house style of clearing out aliens, then Out of Space is going to be for you. Because that's pretty much the entirety of the game. You have a little spaceship divided up into rooms, and basically it boils down to the strategy of clearing out the aliens and the goo and trying to make it a livable space. When you start in a space, you'll have a couple of boxes. Each room will have, not well, not each room. Some rooms will not have this, but 95% of them do, will have like an electrical node where you can put a battery. And then there will be nodes coming off of that battery that you can put things that require electric. So if you have a TV, for example, you can put on one of the battery nodes and it will be powered, and the TV will give you ads so that you can see when things are on sale in the store. Or you may get an exercise bike, which you can sit on and generate money. This whole time, anytime you're doing anything that isn't clearing out purple alien goo and purple aliens, that means those little motherfuckers are taking over the rest of the house. And I say those little motherfuckers because you can play this couch co-op, you can play it up to four people, but you can also play it alone. And if you are playing out of space alone, I'm sorry. The game is fucking hard. I didn't think it was going to be like Overcooked levels of hard, because Overcooked is hard because it requires you to play. I don't feel bad comparing this to Overcooked, by the way. There's even an achievement that references it, so it's kind of, they know. like Overcooked requires you, when you're playing alone, to still control two different characters, one with each side of the controller, right? You're on your own in out of space when you are playing by yourself. And it would be fine, except for you are constantly dropping things to pick up something. You can only carry one item at a time. So you need to grow a pumpkin farm so that you have food, because your character gets hungry. Your character gets tired. You need a place to sleep. Or if you don't have a place to sleep, this is one of my big pet peeves. If you don't have a place to sleep, you can't go to sleep until the character just passes out from exhaustion. And if the character just passes out from exhaustion, you have no choice but to wait until it wakes up on its own. So, of course, if you're not moving, the aliens are taking shit over. They will come in the vents. If there is even the tiniest little trace of purple goo anywhere in the ship, it will spawn an egg. The egg pops. If you're lucky, you can catch it, throw some water on it, and get rid of it. But if you are not lucky, if you are passed the fuck out, when you wake up, that egg is going to pop, and there will be alien goo everywhere. I imagine that's what it's like living with teenage boys. There's just goo everywhere, and you don't want to touch any surface, right? imagine that, but the video game. It's incredibly frustrating. Now, I do want to shout out the devs, because I got extremely excited when I popped the game open and it was like, we have an accessibility mode if the game is too hard for you. Fuck yes. I have a pissed off cat. Every game should have an accessibility mode. Every game should have accessibility features. So I go into the settings to turn accessibility mode on, and I am greeted with a warning that doing so invalidates achievements.
No! Why?
Dear developers, I hope you are still listening. It's a little shady at this point in the review. But if you are, don't do this shit. Okay? Don't do this shit. I am disabled. My fingers fucking hurt. Playing a game like this by myself is stressful enough, just in the state of being me. Don't punish me because my body's already doing it on its own. Okay?
It's literally saying that, like, you haven't achieved anything, or you're incapable of achieving something.
You're incapable. Even if you are capable of doing it by yourself, the moment you hit that button, that it's literally like, here's a wall. Fuck you. Don't make a game harder, and don't punish players who are outside of their capability. We can't control that. You know, I can't control that I get hand fatigue. I can't control that, you know, some days I have brain fog and I can't remember. Oh shit, there was a little tiny puddle of goo on the other side of the screen that I can't see anymore. Don't punish me for that by saying that I'm not capable of completing the game like everybody else. That's a huge pet peeve for me. I will always rip on that. I hope they listen to it. I hope they change their mind on it, because that's unacceptable for me. Now, the game is meant to be played multiplayer. Thankfully, despite our current situation, which does not lend itself to having friends come over. If you're by yourself, you're doubly fucked, right? Because everybody should be locked the fuck down and not have friends over right now. But if you have built-in multiplayer team like I have, you're a little better off. So I did play multiplayer with the kids, couch co-op. I'd love to see. I always think that these kind of games are better off with online multiplayer, but it is what it is. I know it's not just a Switch that you can flip. But for couch co-op, it was far more viable to play the game because I wasn't trying to manage everything by myself, and I was able to say, okay, you know, when we were getting ready to open a door to a large room, we knew there would be quite a few enemies inside. One of us could take the broom, which is how you attack the enemies. You can only hit the enemies if you've got the mop and can whack them.
Mop or broom?
It's technically a mop, I guess, but I kept calling it a broom, and I'm still going to keep calling it a broom. I'll probably use it interchangeably. It looks very generic. we're not at the height of realism here, okay? It's not like Cyberpunk where you're like, okay, that is a straw broom in the corner under a neon sign. It could go either way. It could be either or. it cleans up the goo. That's the important part. One of us would be armed with a cleaning device and the other would have the bucket of water. And then the third, whichever other kid was playing with me and number one, it kind of alternated, would open the door and then one would throw the bucket of water in. The other would just go and swing him with the mop, right? And that would be a really viable way to clear it out. You can also get a dog, by the way, and the dog will attack the aliens for you, and that's fucking fantastic. But you have to keep up with food, right? Remember where I said that earlier? The only thing that you can grow for food is pumpkins. And just like everything else that requires you to maintain it perfectly, you got to keep them pumpkins watered. And if you got a dog, you got to feed that motherfucker pumpkins. And you cannot leave a bucket of water sitting around if you have a dog because it'll drink it. You can fuck your whole strategy up if your dog is thirsty. It's really creative the different ways that they've thought to throw wrenches into your game. You have different options for small, medium, or large ships. The more you small, play, medium,
large.
Yeah. the more that you play, the different enemy types that you can unlock, and then it makes the game even harder, and then you'll be punished for accessibility mode, but that's beside the point. you know, they've really thought it out. They've created a fully, you know, fleshed out game with a really cool premise, and it could be a lot of fun to play a local co-op. It's just that I wish they hadn't shit on the accessibility feature.
Yeah, that's a bummer. If you're going to have accessibility features in a game, don't invalidate the achievements. That's stupid. That's negates a no-no. The whole
don't
purpose.
Do that shit. So
overall, $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
At $10, I want to be inclined to say it's an easy buy it, but you do have to take the accessibility thing into consideration. And I wouldn't fault anybody for, you know, being disappointed in that. Hell, I was. Gameplay is great, but yeah, they could definitely work on that aspect. So, I'm going to go with a buy it, but just if you have issues like I do and you need accessibility features, keep that in mind.
Cool. All right, next game is Mycetopia, developed by Ninja Rabbit Studios, published by Rattlelake Games, released November 20th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $4.99. Welcome to the medieval magical kingdom of Mycetopia, where mice live freely in an idyllic country village. Unfortunately, as the story begins, forces of evil have taken away all of the mice except for one elder remaining. Can you become the hero of Mycetopia and save your villagers from the dark minions? Chris, tell us about Mycetopia.
Okay, so Mycetopia is a, so it's basically, it's a Metroidvania, I mean, in every sense of the word. It basically, you know, side-scrolling, exploration, platformer. Whenever you want to fight an enemy, you swing a sword at him. And this one is a little interesting, not in in the sense of how much it kind of strips away from the genre in order to, I guess, be, you know, maintain simplicity. For one, I don't really know that there's a way to restore your health other than getting health pickups. So like, and the cool thing is, like, you know, the graphics are, you know, really nice sprite based pixel graphics, you know, really, really good looking, actually, considering how cheap this game is. And I really like that your character portrait is shown in the upper left corner with like a little, it's kind of like a vine coming out with little flower buds, and those flower buds are your health. And so if you, you know, if you get hit, then one of the flowers falls, and like, I don't know, it's a nice touch. Artistically, this game is great. But yeah, so like, there's no menu in the game. Like, there's none. So that's, you know, one thing already. Like, there's no like item management or items. Like, but so you go through these caves, which, well, the first series of like stages are, well, the first area, let's say, is a cave. And you go through it. Each room has, like, you know, some enemies of a few different types. Like, there's about three different types, I think, in the cave level, which is a crab that looks just like these crystals that are in the background. So you might run into them if you're going too fast because you didn't quite see that there's actually a crab under that thing. And then there's like bats, which are very annoying, and like little kobold type lizard warrior things that run at you with a sword. And yeah, basically, it's just like going from room to room. You collect them on your map, which they're just shown. Each room is just shown as a rectangle on a map. So the map tells you nothing other than here's where you've already been and here's where there's still an open door. And you just walk around until you can't open any doors anymore. And then you go find like what boss or secret room is like, you know, contains another villager that goes in the village, or like another like item that you can get. There's also secret levels that are not secret. You just walk into the room and there's a little swirly thing and you jump into it. And that takes you to like a little, like a one or two room, like sub level that, you know, it, they generally aren't any more challenging than the regular game. So I'm not quite sure why they're there. But if you get through it, then you get a piece of the fountain, which you're trying to get all 10 pieces of the fountain so that it restores. And I assume you get something at that point. The fountain in town. So you're saving people and pieces of a fountain. And so like I said, going back to the life thing. So in each room, there's like several pots that you break open. And they either drop green blocks, which are the currency of the game, that you can't spend yet because you have to rescue the people who will allow you to spend money. Or it will drop a heart if you've lost one. And that's the way that you stay alive in this dungeon, because if you get hit three times, and it just sends you back to town, and then you have to retrace your steps. Fortunately, you don't lose anything for dying. It just brings you back to town. And in fact, in different stages, there are portals that will take you back to town, and so those kind of work as like kind of checkpoints. And yeah, so it's just going around and like saving people and stuff. And you know, once you save like the different mice that live in town, they'll either do something like, you know, of course you save the blacksmith whose name is Mr. Smith, and he'll upgrade your sword and he'll give you a bow for free. And so now you have a bow as well as a sword, and the bow shoots in a straight line, only left or right. So it's kind of just like the sword, but more distance. And, but you know, it of course helps you get through different stages. If you shoot through a flame and hit a spider web with it, you know, you can't get through the spider web. And if you hit it with that flaming arrow, then it burns up and then you can go through it. Fortunately, there's a flame in front of every spider web. So therefore, the game sets that up pretty nicely. So yeah, it's just extremely simplistic, and it does get challenging, especially in the beginning before you get that bow and the ability to upgrade your sword, because it's just like you're just wandering through this dungeon trying not to get hit three times. Or if you do get hit, you just keep, you know, every time you re-enter a room, all the enemies and like the pots restore, you know, come back. And so, you know, you end up doing this move where you just keep going out and in and out of a certain room just to smash one pot and hope that it drops a heart instead of the money that time. So yeah, like And of course, after the cave, you know, I think there's like three bosses in the cave, and then you go to the forest and there's bosses and other critters there and so on and so forth. Despite all this, I could not help but be charmed by this game. It's really simplistic, but at the same time, that's kind of like what's good about it. And that's pretty typical of the Rattalaika published genre, is to say, whenever they come out with a game. It's like, there's not a whole lot of depth to it, but you really do want to see it through to the end. And once you do start getting upgrades, it becomes a lot more fun. It's like, because now you actually have a chance. You're actually saving up money for a thing. It's just that, like, it kind of, although it does follow the rule of the double jump, which I've explained before is, you know, how long from the start of the game till when you get the double jump is a factor. And the double jump is the very first thing that you get. The very first mouse that you save teaches you how to jump twice.
Yeah.
It's vital.
Exactly. It's vital. It follows every rule of the Metroidvania, except it does not even attempt to bog you down with any sort of like management or organization. It's just keep clearing the rooms until you save something or kill something, and then you get the other thing that'll let you go into the other rooms, and then just keep going. So, you know, it has that as a strength and a weakness simultaneously, but where its real strength is in the presentation, because the graphics, even though they don't have that awesome, like, you know, sparkle that something like Alwa's, you know, Legacy has, it's still nice. It's really nice looking. And the town theme is really good, even though it's not chiptune. But the stage themes are chiptune. So that's, I don't really care about that. It's all good music. And yeah, it's just like, it keeps you coming back, but it doesn't demand very much of you. And, I think if you get 5 fountain pieces, rescue 3 villagers, and obtain, I think, 2 weapons and 2 special moves, then you get a platinum trophy. So
yeah, it's a Rattalaika, so you just expect those to be fairly easy with achievements.
Yeah, it's not hard achievements. They're things that you're gonna get in a normal playthrough, and probably about the halfway point of the game, which, you know, is a couple hours, I guess.
Cole, did you get any time with Mystopia?
I did, and I kind of just agree with Chris. Like, it's really pared down Metroidvania, but what's there is solid gameplay at the same time.
Yeah. The control is incredible. It's really, it feels good to play.
Yeah, like, if you hadn't told me it was a Rattalaika, I wouldn't have known it off the top of my head. I would have been like, yeah, this is just a little bit of a pared down Metroidvania with, you know, pixel graphics that are good. Pixel art's not my favorite, but for what's there, it's good. It's well done. But it looks decent. It plays well, and I thought it was really solid.
Well, then overall, $5. What do the two of you think?
I say it is a buy it and a fuck it, why not?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, roll with the fuck it, why not? I think that it can be a little frustrating because it is so pared down in the beginning. But once you power through it and start to actually find upgrades and stuff, it changes and it's more manageable.
Yeah, the one rule of a good Metroidvania that it doesn't follow is that a good Metroidvania keeps you anticipating what you're going to get next. Mm-hmm. It always has a point like that is especially crucial in the beginning where you're like, you know that something that you're going to get something that's really obviously going to help you. But like in this game, I was like, am I ever going to spend these freaking green rocks that I've collected hundreds of?
Yeah.
And then once I did, it was fine. But yeah, and obviously for $5, this is not a strong criticism of the game. It's just like in general, I think a design concept that Metroidvania making folks need to keep in mind is, you know, keep people, keep them focused on the purpose of what they're doing. And you'll find people retaining the game a lot better and getting farther and heaping more praise upon it because yeah.
Cool. Cole, any thoughts?
No, I agree. Cool. I'm on board.
All right. Well, one final game to talk about tonight. We got one more installment of Black Desert, developed and published by Pearl Abyss, available on Xbox One and PS4, with packages priced at $29.99, $49.99, and $99.99, depending on what you want to get. The Prestige Edition launched at retail for $29.99. It includes a Black Leopard pet, some in-game currency, a bunch of other bonus goodies there. Black Desert is a living world MMORPG. Experience fast-paced, action-packed combat, hunt monsters and huge bosses, fight with friends in a guild to siege nodes and region castles, train your life skills such as fishing, trading, crafting, cooking, and much more. Purnell, this is week 3. What did you think of your time over the past month with Black Desert?
I think that in the end, I almost feel like I hit the nail on the head on week 2 with it, which is that it's a competent game, and the flow of combat is still probably its greatest selling point. Because even if the actual adversaries aren't particularly, you know, intelligent, you still get a sense of that freneticness when you're actually chaining a series of moves together, assuming you can remember all the damn button combinations for like the gajillion moves you'll learn. But if you are that person, then you have a lot at your disposal that's a little bit more fun to do and clicking icons at the bottom of a screen, which is what a lot of MMOs have been over the years. The actual systems that work in the game are still also very convoluted, because for the record, I never quite got a full grasp on like the three different daily awards you get when you log into the game. I would just boot it up and like, if I got a stamp, I got a stamp, whatever. I never quite truly got a handle on like a cool like thing to go about trying to do in the game. And what I mean by that is I pretty much spent my entire time talking with dude, getting arrow to pop up. I'd follow the arrow, resolve the mission. If I got a sub quest, every once in a while I get the cognitive logic, the reasoning to be like, okay, I can go find the quest screen in the main menu and just try to select one of those quests and hope to switch it to navigate and then follow that arrow. But nothing that ever made me go, I'm going to specifically pursue this quest line and resolve it. It was just new arrow, new follow arrow. Bosses are a particularly interesting lot in this game, though, because the bosses follow the same issue that I had when I first logged into the game, which is that you boot it up and it's just like a sea of guys showing up. And every time you destroyed an object, the respawn rate needed to be kept so high because of the volume of players that the object would just come right back, or enemies, whether it be an energy enemy or a destructible object. Bosses are like that kind of too. Because since there are no, you're not really in any instances, everyone's populating the same world. If you get a quest that says, go and fight this boss, you'll go up to the boss area, summon the boss or provoke the boss or whatever you have to do to make the boss come out. Whoever's in the area at the time is just going to fight the boss with you. You're not in a party. It's just a bunch of people sharing the space and you all wail on this dude. I fought a boss at least one time where I beat my instance of the boss and the quest was still wrapping up the description of like, you completed the quest or whatever. And another one just started crawling out. It was like, well, I guess I'll just fight this one too because shit, you know. And there's something about that just kind of kills, unless you're just doing the whole, you know, again, check boxes for new stuff bit. It takes some of the volume out of the game. Where, like I said, I've played MMOs in the past, and if you beat a boss generally in those, usually the ones where they give you instances, of course. When you beat the boss, you kind of would have that moment of like, okay, what is the loot that I just got? I mean, look at the loot and prepare it. Or celebrate with your team if you're playing with a team of players and whatnot. You feel some symbols of, okay, I completed this. This feels kind of good. It's done. Whereas in this, it just felt like nothing. It felt anticlimactic, you know? So overall, what ended up happening with this game was, I would say it's a beautiful game when it loads because, and I think this might, maybe this is a console issue, but I had, even this far in, I had more than a few moments, even post full game boot up, even at this point, where I'd enter a town or go to a location and I'm talking like gray silhouettes because the game didn't completely load up the NPC I was going to talk to yet. So I was like, wow, this is something. But I guess it didn't matter too much because, again, I didn't care about most of the people I dealt with. Though the voice acting with those people was pretty good. They did a good job with the VA. It's just I didn't care. So it makes me, it feels weird to even describe it this way because at the end, it really just take me back to this concerning question of, did I have these issues because I'm an old man? Or did I have these issues because this is an overwhelming product that doesn't train you for pretty much in any way on like how to approach it? The most you get as a tutorial is you might be able to ask the little black blob, black spirit thing, what is cooking? And he might say, here's some text. But nothing now, it just goes in like a, here's a learning session. Here's how you cook. It's just cooking something. You buy ingredients and you make shit. Whatever. But it's a very overwhelming product that looks nice and it doesn't have any real weight to it. It's just busy work. So is that because I'm old? Is that what MMOs have become? Or is that just what this MMO is? I don't know.
I think it's just what this MMO is. It's different from other MMOs. I appreciate the fact that there's a heavier emphasis on interesting combat instead of just clicking a button and letting it resolve itself.
I can agree with that for sure. Cause even if enemies weren't particularly challenging, that was the thing I enjoyed most about it. It was like, oh, that's cool. I'm doing my string of attack combos and whatnot. Side cut. Though some of the attacks did kind of overlap in a way where I was like, I wanted to do this attack, but it just always does this attack because the button combo to do it is so small to read on the screen. I think I'm doing it right, but maybe I'm doing it wrong. It was like, to be for specific, and just for anyone listening, the attack in question was the Celestial Spear. I could never quite get it to work when I wanted. It was always an accidental activation. Like, oh, okay, there it is. Spear. But I feel like at the end of the day, this is definitely not a deny it because the game is definitely playable. There is joy, enjoyment to be had from it, but it's also far from a buy because the fact that you have to be a very specific type of player to boot this bad boy up and untangle the web that it's giving you to come away and say, I have a game plan in mind. I'm going to do these things. I'm going to love it.
No.
A lot of people are going to be like me where they want to boot the game up. They want to be at least kind of given some kind of like direction of like, here's the gameplay loop. Enjoy, you know, and then from there, you decide what you want to do. Do you want to focus on the trading economy? Well, guess what? We gave you a decent tutorial on how to deal with the trading economy, so get started. No, and this is just like, oh, fuck, there's trading. Use some contribution points. Where the fuck did those come from? I don't know. Yeah, I got two of them,
It
though.
Reminds me a lot of my initial time playing Final Fantasy XI, where it just drops you in and lets you go. And there's not really much to guide you. At least they do give you like quest markers in this game. And I appreciate that when there are places that you have to go to, you can open up your quest menu and just select the move to option and your character will auto run there. I wish there was a fast travel system, but at least there's an auto travel system. So you could set the controller down and hit the bathroom while your character runs for 10 minutes.
Honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if there might even be a fast travel that we just couldn't unlock.
I don't think there is a fast travel, but I could be wrong. I haven't found it. I haven't seen any in reviews. I haven't seen it mentioned. Fuck if I know. Overall, $30 on this one. I personally think it is worth checking out. The Prestige Edition for $30, I think, is a worthwhile purchase just based on all of the goodies that you get included in there. The in-game currency alone is enough to buy you some inventory slot upgrades, which I would definitely recommend you go with inventory upgrades before any cosmetic goodies. But $30, your verdict officially?
I think it's a try, though I 100% agree with what you just said about inventory. That shit's important, even if there's storage trunks in the game. Get inventory slots. God.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a tease with a little black cloud. Like, here's some inventory slots. And then the print is like, good for one day. Like, no! Permanent, damn it! They know how important inventory is. That's why he gives it to you for a friggin' day. but yeah, I'd give it a try because, again, I'd be concerned about saying go ahead and buy this knowing that there is a wall to climb, a hefty wall to climb, And I personally didn't experience the reward for I didn't experience the reward that comes from surmounting the wall. No. So I can't they say buy it, but I can say try it, because there is a game there that can be enjoyable. And there was stints of that I personally did manage to enjoy. It was just everything around it that was like, what?
No. You want to know what is awesome, though? The fact that Root Beer Is My Jam just subbed for 19th month. Isn't that crazy, Purnell?
Yeah. Woo. We love Root Beer.
Is it me or the other one?
Oh, I'm asking you, Purnell.
Oh, that's great. Root Beer is it's not just your jam. It is also my jam. Fucking yeah.
Oh, man. And Cole, thank you for the 100 biddies.
Yay.
Why are you doing that?
I don't know. It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Cole's okay, too, I guess.
Cole just wants to get a shout out on the show.
Yeah. I'm always here and nobody ever acknowledges me. Nobody appreciates my presence.
Hey, we appreciate your presence. That's why you're here with us.
Do you know how hard it is to be a mod in this channel? Oh, my God.
Not hard at all.
We can't even start the show without
Oh, my God. I'm a mod in this channel.
If you don't the show can't even start. So I think you're quite appreciated. Just saying.
Raider Biz says Eternal Rage is my favorite member of the SML podcast. Aw.
I appreciate you sucking up. and Ian acknowledges my pie.
Your pie.
Yeah.
Well, there does anyone go. Have any final words before we before Thanksgiving? And
eat so much.
Eat so much. Enjoy pie. That
shit.
Season your fucking turkey. Over.